right, welcome to our Why Wednesday out from the Cube. Last week we did our Why Wednesday on a Thursday, and it was a solo. And Jason and I have been doing this. I bet you we've been doing this now for 15, 16 weeks. I need to add up the amount of weeks that we've done this with our Wednesday, Thursdays that we've done. But we got Jason back in town this week, and we're both – this is what I was thinking. I told a friend of mine yesterday, I've been not feeling the best. I still have a lot of energy, a lot of juice, still getting things done. But my nose is running. My throat hurts a little bit. And this is what I'm saying. Either I'm sick, coming down with something, which I don't get sick that often, but my spring allergies are really bad. And so I don't know if I'm the groundhog. Is it the groundhog that comes out around April 1st? Yeah, the groundhog that sees a shadow? Either that or like I'm just on it and spring is coming.
Spring is around the corner.
Yeah, spring is coming. So if you do watch this on YouTube, and I think Jason's either a little under the weather or has allergies as well, if you see us blowing our nose or picking our nose or whatever it is, that's fine. I got sanitizer next to me, and I don't plan on touching anybody or bumping knuckles. So with that, welcome back in town, Jason, and I'm excited about listening and learning about your week. But before we get into that too much, welcome back, and I guess we will get into it a little bit, although I do have some questions before we get going, and your perspective on some things that have happened in my life. But you were where? You were in New Mexico for a week, or
Cimarron, New Mexico, and just to touch on you, I don't have allergies, and I also don't get sick. However, they had somewhat close to an epidemic out there where they had out of their 80-something, yes, I said 80-something high school students, like 20 or 30 of them were out of school those couple days that I was there because, yeah, so you had a good amount. So I am a little bit under the weather. But Cimarron, New Mexico, which is a small town, I guess it does get to be referred to as a town, population 900. Mm. And it is the new smallest place that I've been to. It's about a 4-hour drive north into the mountains from Albuquerque. So I flew into Albuquerque and then another 3.5-4 hours north to get there.
So I don't know how many people from Albuquerque would be listening to our episode. So you can be honest about it. I've never been to Albuquerque. But I have actually heard great things about Albuquerque.
Albuquerque is an interesting place. Yeah. It's University of New Mexico is obviously there. That's the landmark. I'm not sure how much of a college town it is, although I know that it is, but it's also a city outside of the college. So it's a pretty cool place.
Yeah. So I know I went to the University of Utah, some may know, and was a pseudo manager for the basketball program. And back then, in the early 90s, Utah was very good at basketball, and they were in the WAC, the Western Athletic Conference, and the University of New Mexico was also in that league. And that is when they were actually in their heyday, and they were putting NBA players out, and the pit that they play in. Boy, that thing would have, 15, 16, 20,000 people, and I think it's in the ground. But I never got a chance to actually go to those games, but just heard that Albuquerque was a great place. So with that, I do want to get into your trip, and I want to spend a majority of our time talking about that and what you did and how that came about. I am interested in your perspective on this, and I'm going to tell a bit of a story. I have told this story for those that have been listening, to our podcast with some regularity. You've heard this story. I've said it maybe 2 episodes ago. And I haven't, I know Jason doesn't listen to all our episodes, and I know he's busy with a variety of other things. And so I'm going to say this story really to get his perspective on it. This has to do with my kids. Jay knows my kids, worked with my kids for 1.5 years. And actually, I credit, Coach Jay with, laying the foundation for my kids, not in just in terms of skill level, but in terms of passion and interest and, the enthusiasm that they have to this day with basketball. I credit, Jason with that. But here's the story. Last Sunday, we rolled into a gym to play a 5 o'clock game. We got there at 3, so we got there very early. The 8th graders were about to play, and they were 15 minutes away from playing. The weather in St. Louis was bad. It wasn't great. It wasn't horrible. They were still playing the games, but the weather wasn't great. The 8th grade team had 3 or 4 players, so they needed 1 or 2 more to play and to get this game going that was going to start in about 10 or 15 minutes. The coach looked at Camden and said, could he play if need be? And I said, absolutely, he could play. And now he's a fourth grader. And he, you know, him being able to compete and do things with eighth graders is a stretch. But there are some things that he could probably do to contribute. He was very reluctant about warming up with the eighth graders. Very reluctant. I actually kind of grabbed him a little bit and said, hey, you get your tail out there and warm up with these kids, right? One, it was very flattering that they asked him. It's a great opportunity. He gets to go through layup lines. He gets to kind of rub shoulders with these older kids that he looks up to. He looks up to the coach, kind of all this stuff, right? And I essentially demanded that he go out and do it, right? I don't know if that's good parenting or bad parenting, right? but I politely said, you get out there. It's going to be a rough evening for you. So he went out and did layups, right? But then by that time, six other kids showed up. So they ended up with 10 players, 10 eighth graders. And when layup lines were done, Camden came off the floor, sat down next to me, and we watched them play, and that was it. But the rest of the day, this is what I thought about. And I'm interested in your perspective on this. I'm wondering a couple things. Why I can't be that person. Why I can't see people that are more talented than me, that I feel that I would like to be like, that I look up to, that I admire and respect, and, you know, and really admire for the level they're at, the pay grade they're at, the responsibilities they're at, whatever it is, but I will not get into layup lines with them, right? But here I am as a parent or a coach to my child saying, this is an amazing opportunity, even if it's for 5 or 10 minutes. You need to get out of your comfort zone. You need to go roll with them. You need to go know, feel, and create the mindset that you belong and can contribute and can provide value. And so because of the coaching and parenting he got, he was forced out there. He was, right? But one, man, it'd be nice to have somebody like that that is right behind me saying, George, get your ass out there, right? It'd also be nice to have that in myself to say, hey, there's Jay, there's Ed Milette, there's somebody at AB, there's a CEO at that company, there's a, you know, John O'Leary, who's a great guy here in town, and that I'm kind of nervous about reaching, like, all any of those type of things, right? Like, why can't, if I expect those things of my kids, I wonder why I'm so fearful to expect and demand those things of myself. And everybody listening, I mean, like, that's just not me, I don't think. I think that intersects somebody else, because we would all do something like that for our kids. Like, hey, get out of your comfort zone. Quit being shy. Quit being passive. Like, get out there and knock it out of the park. You belong. You're good enough. You're valuable enough. But when it's put on us, man, it's like, hey, I can't do it. I don't belong. Those people are on a different level, and I'm comfortable sitting on the bench watching them warm up. But I thought about that, and I was like, I bet you Jay either has a good story, a good perspective, a good example, and I think will have a good, you know, commentary about that.
So can I, if I do this, if I do screen share,
yep,
can you see my screen?
I can. Perfect.
Can you read that so your viewers can see and hear? I and this is what's wild. This was actually pulled up, like pulled up and ready to go. So this is an icebreaker that I do with my group. So we'll talk about the group in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. This is one of the questions. As you see, this is round three. Right. So yeah, go ahead.
No, it says round three. When facing difficult feedback, A, sugarcoat it. B, tell it like it is. C, never say it. D, am I intentionally vague and hope they get it? Okay, and then it says, share your name and favorite childhood cereal.
Right, so I have the room. So just to set that up, have the room. I'm going to stop to share now. Perfect. So I'll have the room, and I'll go A's in one corner, B's in one corner, C's in one corner, D's in another corner. And the first part of that is when giving feedback, I have to give some difficult feedback.
Okay.
How do you give that feedback? Or do you sugarcoat it? Do you tell it like it is? Are you intentionally vague? Or do you just, I forgot what C was. Jesus, where'd it go? Or never say it. So sugarcoat it, tell it like it is, never say it, or just intentionally vague and hope they get it. Mm-hmm. So what would you say? And when giving feedback, what would you say?
Boy, you know, I hate to be kind of to waver on it or to be on both lines. I gave really powerful and intense feedback yesterday to my son at a basketball workout. It was feedback, and it was intense. It was on point. He knew exactly what was going on. And there are times if I had to give you feedback, it would be very I would sugarcoat it, I'm sure, or I would just ignore it. Yeah. Mm. So I think it really
– So person, relationship kind of varies.
Perfect. Yep.
Okay. What about if you were receiving that feedback? Where would you rather be told like it is? Would you rather have it sugarcoated, never say it at all, or be intentionally vague?
Again, I think it depends on – I would say it depends on the relationship. If you gave me feedback and it was harsh in tone and you say I wasn't doing a good job at X, Y, and Z, I know where that is coming from, right? If it's somebody else that I don't know that well, or somebody I'm intimidated by, or somebody I admire but don't know, right? Like, I remember, not to go off on a tangent, I remember when I worked at the University of Utah, I really looked up to Rick Majerus. He was the head coach, and he was very intense and very hard to get close to, and he did not like many people. So when I say he didn't like me, it wasn't just me. He didn't like a lot of people, right? And I remember one time, like, it was a random thing. He had a recruit in, and he asked the recruit, who is the NBA leader right now in game-winning shots? And I was on the side, and I think I forgot who I said. I think I may have said, like, Derek McKee. And he looked at me, and he says, are you an expletive idiot? And I remember that's kind of like feedback, but it shut me down for like 2.5 weeks. And I was like, so I kind of learned my lesson, like, hey, just on certain things, it depends. But if you were to say something like that, you know, it's a totally different vibe. Yeah. It's a totally different feel.
So the point behind it is most people, when giving feedback, have a different approach than when receiving feedback. And so when giving feedback, many people fall into those vague, sugar-coated, never say it categories. But when receiving feedback, many people want to be told feedback, like, just tell me like it is. Mm-hmm. And so it's nothing. There is no right or wrong answer. There is nothing good or bad about straddling the line or anything about that. It is simply an exercise. And this was the third round. So there's two other exercises that we do with two other questions, that it's just simply an exercise to show that we are all different. And if we were all the same, then this would be boring.
Right. Yep.
So, but it's funny to me how people, and this is where it ties into your story, where I feel like it ties into your story. You said you gave Camden some pretty direct orders of get out there, not some pretty direct influence of get out there, get out your comfort zone, but you wouldn't have necessarily done the same for yourself, or you wish that you had someone to do the same for you. That's kind of where we are as people.
Yep.
We treat people, especially when the relationship is there. The relationship is there, we treat people differently. And that's when you actually have to be more aware, I believe, because when the relationship is there, like, who knows, man, you could have like totally shut him down. I'm like, I know, you know, he's not that type of kid, but imagine if he was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
sure.
You pushing him that far outside of his comfort zone not only got him outside of his comfort zone for that part, but shut him down. Like you said, Coach Majerus said that to you and it shut you down for 2 weeks. Like, what if that would have shut him down for 2 weeks or 2 months? So, again, there is no right or wrong. I think it's just another one of those instances where we have to, and that's where it goes back to the Outward Mindset book of we have to put ourselves in that place of, in layman's terms, putting ourselves in somebody else's shoes. We say it all the time, but we don't do it.
Right. So, I mean, to circle back to that story, when I thought about that and reflected back on it, it wasn't, it was really centered around, you know, my son getting out of his comfort zone and then kind of walking away from it saying, you know, I do belong, and I knew those kids would treat him like gold. And they did. So he felt like he belonged. He felt like he could contribute. There was part of him saying, man, I might actually get a chance to play, all that sort of stuff. So, but when it was all over, I sat there and I was really just reflecting on myself saying, and I just don't have that. I don't have, you know, but then it had me thinking throughout the week that metaphor. And then it had me thinking about you, and I knew we were getting back together to have these conversations. And I know that I think that you prescribed that mindset of this is what I want out of my life. This is the direction I'm going. This is what is going to happen to me. These are the relationships I am going to have. And I am, I deserve them, right? I've worked hard enough. I'm serving the right way, whatever it is. Right. But then it's still that thing of taking that step.
Yeah.
All of us that are, you know, in our cubicles that are sitting down saying, man, I wish I had that coach to say, hey, get your ass out of the cube and go sit down and go have dinner or go have lunch in the cafeteria with those people. Go do it. Instead of sitting by yourself, go do that. Go do that or go meet those people or go to that networking event or go make 10 extra sales calls to people that you're nervous about calling, like all those sorts of things. But it had me thinking about, like, if you have any – do you think about that? I know where you want to go. I know where you are pushing to be and the person that you're pushing to become. And I'm wondering if that is a strategy you have in your mind on situations similar to Camden's, but also similar to my mindset and thinking about it.
Yeah. So two things. My only pseudo, and I say pseudo very literally, I mean very figuratively, because I don't have an issue with it at all. But my only pseudo issue with that situation specifically would be it's another situation where if you're not in the picture, that happens a lot more organically. So instead of it being an organized eighth grade game where five eighth graders aren't there, there's only a team full of two or three, and Camden has to play, and you are quote unquote forcing him to play. If you take that exact same scenario and put it on a playground or put it in an unorganized environment and there's, you know, nine guys and Camden makes the 10th guy and he's not big enough, strong enough, good enough to be out there, but he makes 10, all of a sudden he gets out there. And that was my life.
Yep.
That was my life. Because and then so many things happen. Like, so you get to a point where, A, they're not going to call you out there if they don't feel like you're ready. And B, you get to a point where, even specifically basketball, you value every possession because you know that if you lose, you may not get back on the court.
Yep.
And so that's my only thing with that is, like, again, putting them in that situation where that happens organically. So now all of a sudden, Camden's playing with guys that are 3, 4, 5. I spent my entire childhood playing against guys that were 5 to 10 years older than me.
Do you find that easier now professionally and in your business life to go roll with people? I'm using this phrase incorrectly and it's not on you, but where you don't feel you belong, right? If I were to go roll in and be an eighth grader or whatever, and I'm in the streets of Cleveland with you.
Yeah.
I'm not good enough to belong in those games. Right.
Yep.
At all with my skill level. Do you think that you having that mindset, hey man, I grew up always, maybe not the best, but I always got out there and pushed my limits.
Yeah, it's ebbed and flowed, literally. So, my first few NBA environments, I went back to being that little kid that felt like I didn't belong. When the very first NBA environment that I walked into, the first person that I saw was Ray Allen. Mm. Like I got another book over here and he calls it called Radical Leap. Mm. And he calls it a OSM, a oh shit moment. Like that was it. And so it's ebbed and flowed because I also, and I just recently just said this to the superintendent in New Mexico. I also know that if I had the confidence that I have now, in those first few NBA experiences, I would have definitely made a team. Like my first few, I did. I reverted back to being that little kid that felt like I didn't belong. And now it's totally different. So
now, yeah, different. Now, I know the end. So there's a whole podcast episode on that comment. There is. It's that feeling of being confident and letting opportunities. And I know the answer to this. I believe I know the answer to this. When you look back on that, that was on you.
No right? question
it,
about it.
Yeah, like it's not a skill thing. It's not that you necessarily weren't good enough. It was a mindset. It is a belief that you, it is a limited, to quote Tony Robbins, it's a limiting belief you had in your mind that you roll through some front doors, you see Ray Allen and you're like, oh shit, I don't belong here. Right. But now the, you know, the 35 or 38 year old, 30, or did you just turn 40? The old, 42. The 42 year old Jason says, man, if I could roll through those doors now, I would have made a team.
I'm kicking them in. I'm kicking them in, kicking right? the doors in.
Do you, I know the answer to this. Do you look back and said, man, why didn't I just have my stuff together?
No.
Right.
No.
Right.
No, because it was what it was because, excuse me, I also believe in the butterfly effect. So, you know, I make the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't go overseas. I don't reconnect with my ex-wife. We don't have our two kids. Like, who knows? And I know that's a deeper rabbit hole than, but it's the reality of it. So right. I look back at that and instead of regretting and saying, I wish that I would have handled that differently, I just look back and say, that was the stepping stone for me to get to where I had to go through that to get to where I am right now. And I wouldn't change where I am right now for anything in the world.
Yeah, neither would I, but I still, you know, one of my character flaws, I do spend a fair amount of time in regret and lost opportunity. I do. And that's something that I've worked on quite a bit over the past number of years and just letting things go and being very happy and content with where I'm at and the butterfly effect, like you're mentioning. But I think a lot of people that do listen to this, you know, said, man, if I could have that opportunity again as a 45-year-old sitting in a cubicle, man, I met that person or went to that workshop or got invited to that or had an opportunity to learn that or could have delivered that or could have made these extra sales calls in my 30s and I could have that lifestyle or those responsibilities and they sit back and, right? But what I feel you're saying or what I hear you saying and what I'm going to take in is the confidence that you have now at 42 that you bang the door down.
Yeah, it's
the door down.
Do you look at that situation and say, I wish I would have done that differently? Or do you look at that situation and say, because I handled it that way, then I'm prepared for the next time.
Sure.
That like that's the one. Yep. That's the one right there. It's only a mistake if you don't learn from it. And right. So you remember back to, and this was confirmation. Everything about that weekend with Evan Carmichael was confirmation, was validity to me. So if you think back to his 3 points, number one, take action. Number two, when you feel that fear, take more action, dive into it. And that's the one where people get stuck because that's the one where it's like, okay, I don't want to record this video. But then you start recording the video and now you want to redo it 37 times because, you know, you want to make it perfect. No, dive more into it. When you're feeling that hesitancy, dive more into it. And that's the one that I got the most clarity out of. And that was actually the second point that I wanted to say. So opportunity is opportunity. That particular opportunity has come and gone. However, it has so prepared you for the next time. Like opportunities come. That opportunities don't come once in a lifetime. They come all the time. And as I've told you before, like the reason that most people don't recognize opportunities is because they either aren't prepared for them, so they don't know what to do with them, or they just don't see it. So, and they're unprepared for it, and so they just don't even see it. Mm-hmm. And because of that, walking into the Bradley Center as a 21-year-old kid, I see opportunities differently now. Mm.
Yes. Not to go off in a rabbit hole, you and I have never talked too much about this stuff. After that first day, so you roll into this training camp, you see Ray Allen. This is a tryout with the Milwaukee Bucks. What year is that?
This was 98. The year that he was leaving Seattle. He, at this point in the summer, he hadn't even played a season with the Bucks yet. This was the summer he was leaving Seattle.
Okay. And you've – you've given me some insight through the years about how you were as a young player. When you roll in and you're like, oh man, there's Ray Allen and I don't belong or any of that. When you are by yourself that night, like what kind of self-talk did you give yourself when that workout, when that practice, when that tryout was done, when you sat down, did you have the mindset of I belong, or did you have the mindset like I'm in over my head, I better figure something else out? Because you said you had an edge to you when you were or did Ray Allen knock the edge off?
yeah, little bit of both. So when that day was over, it turned into like it's the same thing, George. So you get that nervous energy before jump ball. You're in layup line, you're in warm-ups, you get that nervous energy. And I got that feeling up until the very last professional game I played. After playing basketball for 25 years, my last game, I felt that way. And it's not a nervousness of unease. It's a nervousness of I'm ready to show the world what I have. But that particular example was a nervousness of unease and uncertainty. But as soon as the ball goes up, it's let's play basketball. So it didn't even necessarily take me until that night to say I belonged out here. It was, hey, we're playing basketball. This is something that I've done my whole life. Yes, and that probably that experience was the one that catapulted, because when we get into my first couple years overseas, I hadn't gone overseas at that point. Mm-hmm. But when we got into my first couple years overseas, I would look at the other team's roster or know, because I knew who they were, and I would see a guy that went to Michigan or a guy that went to Duke or a guy that went to Carolina, and I would literally be licking my chops knowing that I was a little boy that went to Indiana State, and I couldn't wait to get out there and show them I could care less because you played for Coach Pitino at the time. Let's get it. Right. Let's get it.
So that brings me to something else I wanted your perspective on. We spent the past two guests that we've had on these Fridays, we've spent a fair amount of time talking about getting out of the middle. And you just really kind of brought this up a little bit. There's three parts to this. There's the low end 5-10% that grew up and had nothing and didn't have the education, didn't have the resources, didn't have the network, had the split family, grew up in the streets, didn't have, the private school, like whatever it is, right? And they became stars in whatever field they're in because but they had to scratch and claw their way out. They wanted something more. They wanted something more, and they knew they had to scratch for everything that they had to get. Then you have the people on the other end of the spectrum that have the private school education and the great resources and the money and the family that everybody knows and all this sort of stuff, right? And they are just successful because that's what they have, right? Yep. But we've spent a fair amount of time of being in the middle and how hard it is for people like me. I'm in the middle and I'm trying to do everything I can to have the most dynamic life I could possibly have and do what I can for my children, my community, the people around me and the people I love, all this sort of stuff. Right. Yeah. And it's hard, right? I'm not scratching and clawing because I don't know what it's like to have nothing, but I also don't know what it's like to sit around and have $2 million waiting for me. Yeah. Right. And have people and have a network of people I can just pick up the phone and call and say, hey, I'm thinking of doing this.
Yeah.
Right. But what I heard you just say though, and what made me think about this is, you did scratch and claw when you were overseas playing, and you get these people that are at Michigan or at these other places, and you're ready to fight that battle. You're like, I went to low end Indiana State, right? And that doesn't, wherever you went, I'm ready to fight.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think there's a lot of power in that statement. It's the first thing I thought of.
So, that's the one where it says you're allergic to average. It's that. It's, I heard a quote once and it was one of the most awesome things. It said, the only thing worse than hitting rock bottom is not hitting rock bottom. Mm. So like when you don't hit rock bottom and you're just dangling there just before you hit rock bottom, you don't know that how close you are to rock bottom.
Right.
Like when you hit rock bottom, it's like, oh shoot, I'm here. Like this is the pits and I can only go up from here. Mm-hmm. But as long as you're dangling, you're still in that middle, and the middle can fool you, bro.
Right.
The middle can fool you to thinking that you're doing better than you are. The middle can fool you to think you're working harder than you are. The middle can fool you to, like, the middle can fool you. And so, yeah, like, I would rather scratch and claw than be in the middle, or at least be self-aware enough and be able to reflect on myself enough to know that I'm in the middle and know that this is not where I want to be.
I just feel that, and again, I'm painting this picture on me. It's so easy to be consistent with some of the things that you and I are passionate about and to do that for 2 or 3 weeks and just to be on fire for things. And then all of a sudden the alarm goes off at 4:30 and you sit back and this is what I say. This is just me. It's really not that bad, George. It's really not that bad. You make a good living.
Yep.
Your kids are healthy. You have a nice house. It's not that bad, right? And it's so easy to just sit back and say, why am I really doing this? It's not that. So it's all of us. So that's why it's this Out from the Cube. And a guy I had in last week just really liked the name of our podcast because you got to get out of the middle.
You have to.
You got to want more. But it's so easy to get sucked into that.
It's comfort zone.
It is the comfort. That's
it's comfort zone. I'm comfortable. I don't have everything, all the luxuries and amenities that I dream about or aspire to have, but I know when the next paycheck's coming. I know when the next meal is coming. My kids are cool, and it's that. And yeah, so it's like those commercials. I can't even remember what brand it is now, but it's like sometimes okay is not okay.
Right.
The doctor comes in, he's like, guess who just got off leave? You know, like sometimes, or the tattoo artist, like, this is going to be okay. Like, this is going to be on my body for the rest of my life. I want it to be more than just okay.
Right.
And that's it. Like, people live, but this is the society we live in. And the thing that I found more, that's George, good. Is people are even like, this didn't make sense to me when I first started to hear it. People are scared of failure, but people are also scared of success. Like, they don't want to go. They don't want to go that far. They don't want to go. Like, so even when you say something like, don't wish for that job, but wish for that responsibility, they don't want the responsibility.
Right.
They
just
want the title.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's very comfortable. It gets to be very comfortable living in mediocrity, and that's exactly what it is.
Right. I mean, I think so. That is my push for people, you know, people listening. I know we have our little, Jason doesn't like the word therapy, but just to be real introspective, you know, Jason juices me up quite a bit. Because it's this thing of just trying to be the best, you know, to quote Gary Vee, you know, you only get one life, Jack. You only get one life, right? And I'm not going to let somebody that I don't even know or somebody I haven't talked to in 20 years or somebody that knew me when I was a different person tell me I suck and not let me continue to move forward. I've got to get – I'm driven to get out of the middle, not for me, but for me, my kids, the place I work, the my community, you know, for you. For like everybody, right? Like I'm just really more driven by that. And the more my mind has been wrapped around the middle, the more inspired and motivated I get on some of these things. I heard this week from Ed Mylett, and I really liked it. I heard it yesterday morning. You only give the effort to the level that you feel you are worth.
Absolutely. And right? if you find yourself, because I've heard him say that as well. So those people who only think they're 85s, when they push themselves up to a 90, 95, they will automatically cool themselves back off to an 85 because they don't think they deserve to be a 95 because they only think that they're an 85, which is absurd to me.
Right. So all of us that are sitting around rolling through cubicles and all this and think this is our life and we're clocking in, clocking out, and we have these great dreams and ambitions and we want to get out of the middle.
Do it.
We do it. We do it. But we do it to ourselves. Like, I could go roll with all these people and like have this great week and get these people calling for sales and for workshops and do all this sort of stuff. And like, I'd be like, man, we've got like 5 or 6, 7 calls and things are really rolling. But then next week, like, this might not be the right word, but I'll mentally sabotage myself to get myself back down to where I belong.
That's the right word. Yeah.
Right. Right. And like, hey man, like you crushed it last week and that's not really how you roll. So let's temper this back down and get you to where you're supposed to be. Right. Yeah. When the reality is, but part of that is this, to circle this and tie this all back together, part of everything we're talking about, my belief is, it's me going in line and doing layups with the eighth graders as a fourth grade basketball player.
Exactly. Right?
Because I could go do, as a fourth grader, I can go through my layup lines and do these layup lines with the eighth graders, but then I'm going to go cool myself off and go back to my fourth grade line.
Yeah.
I don't belong. I'm not valuable enough. I'm not worthy enough. I don't deserve it enough. Right. As opposed to the guy that says, screw these guys.
Yeah.
Like, I belong, man. Not only do I belong, but I'm going to dominate and I'm going to kick butt and I'm going to excel here. And I'm about to show to use your quote, I'm going to be nervous, but once that ball's thrown up, I'm about to show everybody how good I am.
Yeah. And it just goes back to specifically with that, take the organized game out of it.
Yep.
And that would happen organically.
Yeah.
That would happen. It would happen organically.
Sure.
And not because now you have, and think about it, they practice with the people that are their age or on their team or at their school. And so you never get an opportunity to even play against somebody that you wouldn't normally play against. Like, I remember jumping in the car and driving to the west side of Cleveland just to go to another playground to play some guys that we wouldn't normally play.
Right. Yep.
Like, let's do that.
Right.
Or
that's business. I know we got the basketball spin on it, but that's you picking up the phone and say, hey, George, there's a networking event over off of Jefferson and we need to go to it. And like, we don't know these people, but let's go roll with it.
Yes.
Right? Say, you know what? There's going to be some executives. There's going to be some Toastmasters group down here in Clayton and you and I need to go to it. Right. You know, it's that whole mindset of like, let's go play. Let's go play with people that are better than us. And let's go play with people we haven't played with before. And let's show them how good we are and that we belong.
Your comfort zone is a beautiful place where absolutely nothing grows.
Right. Right. So you got me juiced up about that. But rolling into this, I haven't talked to you for a week or two. And I really wanted to get into where you've been, what you've been doing, and how this all came about. Because it is kind of this first business trip to a certain extent that it didn't involve an orange basketball with you, and you were able to work with some people. I guess I know we only have like 20 or 25 minutes left, but where have you been the past 2 weeks? I know you said you were in New Mexico and stuff, but who were you working with and how did this all come about? Cause I am interested.
So school district out there. And it did, maybe when I mentioned it originally, you heard PGC. So the original connection actually was a young man that I had in a PGC session last summer in Oklahoma City.
Okay.
He reached out to me through Instagram and said, hey, my principal saw one of your videos and would like to know if you were available and interested to come out and talk to our school. And I remember that's exactly how it was. Well, turns out that the principal was the superintendent and the superintendent was his dad. So it went from principal to superintendent and in-house. And so the kid, Christian, who's a 15, 16-year-old kid that I had in a session last year in Oklahoma City, reached out and his dad saw one of the videos and actually saw one of the classroom sessions because they were there and said, we saw immediately that your message was basketball related, but extended far beyond basketball. Sure. And would you be open to coming to speak with our school district? And that ended up being one day with the teachers, one full day with the teachers, 6 hours, and 2 days with two different schools. So huge school district. The school district is like 1,300 square miles, but it's still only like 500 students, but it's that spread out. So the first day, Monday of last week, I was only with the teachers. I had elementary school for 3 hours, and then I had middle and high school for 3 hours. The next day, I had kindergarten through second grade for 45 minutes, third grade through fifth grade for 45 minutes, middle school for an hour, and high school for an hour and a half, and did the same thing Wednesday.
Perfect.
So two days of students and one day with teachers.
So the first thing I take away from that, And I try to find, some messages in here, things that we should feel proud of, you should feel proud of, or people in general. That is really the impact you had on a 15-year-old, for that 15-year-old to roll back and consider a message that you could bring to his dad and a bunch of other kids. Like, one, it speaks volumes of the kid, right? Yeah. To have a 15-year-old, I wasn't thinking about any. Like, I went to all sorts of camps when I was 15. Not once did I walk away saying, man, I need to have that guy come speak to our school or have that guy meet my dad or whatever it might be, right? Never once thought about stuff like that. So it speaks volumes of the kid, but it also speaks volumes of you and your ability to inspire. And I had a guy on last week that changed my thought about this whole inspiration thing. And you've said this before, this is not earth shattering, but it's not enough just to inspire, right? You inspire me every week, but you are also inspiring me to action. And that was the main thing. Like, hey, we can inspire all day long and give each other goosebumps. At some point you got to take action. So you inspire this kid enough for him to actually go and sit down with his dad and say, hey, dad, come here to YouTube or come here to wherever these videos are and watch the message that this person's delivering. I think this would be good for you and the school. Like you should feel good about that. I know that's, patting you on the back and all that, but that is the first thing that I took away from that. So you flew out there and you spent those days with them. So, without going through your whole slide deck or anything like that, what were you asked to deliver? Or did you say, this is what I will deliver?
Yeah, it was more like, this is what I will deliver. And so we've talked about before how my mind is in content design and delivery mode right now. And so it's funny because I flew out there on Sunday the 10th and on Friday the 8th, turning into the 9th, Marky and I were on the phone and they were down in Emory. They were playing in Atlanta. They were playing Emory. And she had gone out. I'm just setting the table. She had gone out. And so whatever it was 3 a.m. local time before her and I got off the phone. And from 3 a.m. technically Saturday morning, I didn't go back to sleep until about 7:45 because her and I, our conversation spawned that immediate thought, that immediate charge. My mind was on go at 4 o'clock in the morning. And so when her and I got off the phone, I had this thought of, I had been calling this my organizational / corporate / team content. I had been calling it the fundamentals of leadership, but I hadn't delivered it yet. This was just what I was calling it leading up. Whichever way it goes or whichever way that it went, New Mexico was going to be my first delivery of this. But literally 36 hours before I'm about to get on the plane, it came to me and I changed the name to The Power of People. Mm. So the name of this content is now called, and I've changed it even up here on my vision board, to The Power of People. Because George, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. Leadership, coaching, mentorship, motivation, inspiration, none of that matters. What matters is people. Mm-hmm. And how do you connect with yourself enough to be self-aware enough that I can be authentic enough and vulnerable enough to give them the most high version of me, mm-hmm. and now make them more likely to give me their most high version of them, and now we connect authentically? That's people, George. Yep. That's God. Like, you can call it leadership, you can call it whatever you want to, but it's people. So literally 36 hours before I got on the plane, I changed it. And content didn't necessarily change, just the title. And I even get goosebumps even saying that, because that's what it is at the end of the day. It is the power of people. We are who we are. And so delivery kind of changed a little bit. I gave teachers what I like to refer to as an immersion of the information. And obviously my kindergartners through fifth grade, I'm kind of like, we just talked about a couple high level things. We talked about, I didn't even use the word passion. I said, what's your favorite thing to do? Like, Tyler's in elementary school. So if I go in there talking about, hey, Tyler, what are you passionate about? He's like, what is passion? What's your favorite thing to do? And then we talked about, what does a bad day look like for you? Mm-hmm. Or how do you do that? And now how do you handle that? And how do you get out of that? And, 8-year-olds being 8-year-olds, 9-year-olds being 9-year-olds. It's like, a bad day for me is when my brother punches me. Okay, cool. Like, how do you get out of that? he said, I do the angry shake. And he like literally started like shaking his anger out. I was like, so we came up on the spot. We came up with two thumbs up. That is a two thumbs up way to handle that. Like, mm-hmm. get your angry shakes out. Let's think of some two thumbs down ways of handling that. I punch him back. I yell and scream at him. And when I say the content is being curated by them, I'm simply asking questions. And that is what I actually challenge the teachers to, is every phase of school, especially as you get older, every phase of school is someone standing in front of a class telling you what you should think. Mm-hmm. Very little of it is someone asking you or showing you how to think. And like, same thing, coach with questions. The same thing we talked about on the basketball court is the same thing that should be going on in classrooms. Hey, what did you see right there?
Mm-hmm. Right.
At first it'll be quiet because they won't know what to say. They've never been asked that. And so you have that awkward crickets. And then the next thing you know, they say something that's way off the charts. And then the next thing you know, they're saying what you want them to say. And then before you know it, they're saying something that you didn't even think about. Mm. Like, just by asking them, hey, what did you see right there? Like, tell me what you felt right there. Like, how did you get to that? Instead of saying, you should have drove baseline that time. Okay, thanks. Mm. There's no problem solving in that. There's no deductive reasoning in that. There's no conflict resolution in that. I know I should have drove baseline, so that's what I'll do. I told you what to do. I didn't tell you why or how.
Those are good points. I mean, that specifically is a great point, that as a coach, as somebody that works with athletes, young athletes, it is a lot of telling, right? And maybe we don't give people, and even in education, what I find interesting and fascinating about what you just, that everything you just said, the big ticket item I just took away from that is how great of a job you do of changing your message based on your audience.
Yeah.
Changing your words based on your audience. Cause there is a business leadership, people, team lesson in that. There is, right? It's, you can't roll into 8-year-olds and say, hey, Tyler, what are you passionate about?
Right.
You can't, right? You just can't. But the leader that's going to sit there and has to communicate a team vision to a software team has to figure out that audience, has to figure out, right? Because it's really about, you know, I'm more locked in on this inspiration thing in twofold. One, I think you and I have shared this before, or I have shared it with you. And this isn't the Webster definition of inspiration or being inspired, but it's making somebody believe they can do anything. Yeah. Right? But then it's also now, you know, the gentleman we had on last week, Sterling Hawkins was on last week, who was a guy from LA that's a entrepreneur, businessman, guy, said, you've got to do more than that, George. You've got to take action. Inspiration's futile. You know, it's short lived. You know, you've got to inspire enough that they, it resonates for days and their consistency of action. So that is the thing. So I'm fascinated by being more inspired and taking more action and figuring those things out. But as a leader, you have to do that.
Yeah.
Right. So my hope would be, is that when that when your time in New Mexico was over, that they have spent the past week or past 4 or 5 days implementing, maybe not everything. It's hard to implement everything. Hey, this guy came and gave, you know, I came around with 20 pages of notes and we've got to do all this. When the reality is, hey, Jason said 4 or 5 things we really should start to do, right? We can't do it all. But here's 4 or 5 things that we need to implement. These are the things that inspired me. This is the action we should take. And this is how it intersects me. So I hope that would be it. I would hope that you didn't walk away and everybody, you know, you collected a check and they never hear from, you know, they never implement anything that you delivered for them. Right. Would be my hope. That's where we have to
get. Do you have your phone with you?
I do.
I just sent you a text message.
Okay.
This that I just sent you was sent to me Perfect. By the second grade teacher. And this was her asking the second graders what they got out of my talk.
Perfect. Let me read this. Okay. Yeah. It's about 4:25. We got time. This is great. This is great. I love this stuff. I really do. You know what? Because, you know, you could have anybody listening, right? I'm going to circle back to something. Make sure I don't lose my train of thought. I was down last week, was wondering why in the hell I'm doing this podcast and why I'm taking all these notes and why I get up at 4:15 in the morning and why I'm so locked in on all this sort of stuff. And I was kind of down at the bottom. I got up that particular day. I got up like at 3:15, grabbed my phone, came downstairs, sat on this couch and looked at LinkedIn. I had a message from somebody that lives in Ireland. One person lives in Ireland that listens to our podcast every day on the way on his long commute, he said. And he just stroked me and us about how much the podcast means to him and how it's changed his life and all that. And I'm like, man, that's awesome.
Yep.
Right? So, I mean, I got up and I showered and made some coffee and I hit record and put one out. Because I was like, shit, this stuff, it's valuable to me. I'm getting a lot out of it. But it's impacting somebody. And so regardless of what you think about a small school in a town of 900 with 5 kids, 25 kids, 50 kids, or 100 kids. But this lady thought enough of her time with you that she took notes down on big post-it boards and looks like she taped. She did tape. She taped this.
But this is not her writing it down. This is her asking the students, what did you get out of Mr. Wells talking? And what you're reading is their response.
So these are their responses, her writing.
Her writing,
from Jason Wells. Yeah. So essentially, I'm guessing she is asking these young kids, what did you get?
9-year-olds.
What'd you get from this? And this is a quote from a kid. If you are angry or have bad feelings, think of someone else and let it go. Right? Perfect. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Right? Yeah. Match your skills, what you're doing, what you're good at, with what you like to do. And that is your passion.
Yep.
So, right? So this is what right? This is me. Like, this is 9-year-old. This isn't my kid. This isn't my 9-year-old in third grade, right? Like it's amazing the things we're trying to teach these kids as parents.
Yeah.
That we forget these things as 45-year-old adults.
Absolutely.
And it's a shame that we don't hold each other accountable to these same things. It's it's a shame that I don't have an accountability group or a great friend like you that sits there and says, "Hey George, this is what are you good at?" Or "This is what I think you're good at." And does it match your passions, right? Match your skills, what you're good at, with what you love to do, your passion. These are 9-year-olds, and these are 9-year-olds
never met me and may not ever see me again.
Perfect. Right. And people this is great. This is great. I love this stuff, man. We're going over this hour time. No, because I mean, this is all good stuff. And I can twist the words around for a 45-year-old adult and have that inspire me. Right. Yeah. People that bully are insecure. They don't feel good about themselves. So they pick on others to feel better. So listen, if you're sitting in your cubicle and you have a passion and you have a skill set and you're really into it and you want to go and you want to get out of your comfort zone, you know what's going to knock you back into your comfort zone? It's going to be one guy that says you suck.
Yeah.
And it's going to be one comment on Instagram. It's going to be one person in a meeting that looks at you and says, "Well, that's the stupidest idea I've ever heard," which I have heard in the professional world.
Yeah.
I have gone into meetings in boardrooms and said different ideas. And I've had leaders look at me and said, "That's the dumbest idea we've heard."
Yeah.
Right. And then only to have it implemented by them 2 or 3 weeks later, just twisted a little bit different. Right. I've seen that. And but the point that I've learned from Gary Vee and other people, the people that want you, that are saying you can't do something, are the people that have already given up on their own dreams or given up on that. And they just don't want you to knock it out.
Absolutely.
Right. If I were sitting around, Jay, and you and I were having a talk and you wanted to be a TEDx speaker, Jay, you're not going to do that, man.
Right.
What's your message? Right?
Right.
I've listened to these talks. You can't do it. And in the back of my mind going, shit, I wanted to do that 5 years ago too, but I quit on it. Well, shit, I'm not going to let Jay do it.
Absolutely.
I'm not going to have him show me how easy it is. Right.
Yeah.
So that's the same idea. The people that are bullies are just insecure. They don't feel good about themselves. So they pick on others to make themselves feel better.
Yeah.
If you observe bullying, be the cooler person and don't ignore it.
Right? So what I told them there is I told them to basically redefine what cool is. So usually the cool person will see the bullying and not say anything because they're the cool person. So my thought was, like, redefine what cool is. No, make the new cool be you see bullying going on, and instead of walking past it and acting like it didn't happen or it's not happening, redefine what cool is and walk in and say, hey, stop doing that, and talk to the person that's being bullied, or even talk to the person that's doing the bullying, and you intervene. Like, show me how cool you are by intervening in that situation.
Right. So, yep. And I think that happens at 45. I think that bullying happens at 45, and it's just we label it something different, right? You know what's cool to me? I'm at 45, and I've said this before, and, you know, and my boss has heard it and probably tucked it away, so when review time comes and raise time comes, he pulls it out, right? Listen, I'm too old to be wrapped up in title and pay grade and vacation time and all that. You know what I'm into? I'm into being a part of a company that's having an impact in St. Louis, and I'm into being around a bunch of people that want to get out of their comfort zone, and I'm into being surrounded by people that expect the best out of me, and then I reciprocate that and try to get the best out of them, and doing it in a way that is fulfilling and uplifting and encouraging and positive and accountable to one another. Like, that's what I'm into. I'm just 45. I don't have time for this other shit anymore. Yeah. I don't have time to be sitting around and saying, Jay, you can't be a TEDx speaker. You can't do this, or that's a dumb idea. Right? I'd rather be a part of a group of people that know what they want to do, what they want to build, how they want to impact their teams, their companies, their region, their community, and I can help contribute to that. Yep. Right? And it is bullying. Yep. We call it bullying when they're 9-year-olds, and we call them their assholes when they're 45 years old, right? And that's what Absolutely. We do, right?
Absolutely.
Right? And that put that on a t-shirt.
To talk about what you said before, thank you. First off, when you said my ability to be able to change the information, according to who I'm delivering it to, but think back to when we were working together on the basketball court, it's exactly the same thing. My challenge to you guys as coaches was, here's the content. I'm giving you the content. What you have to do is you have to be able to know how to, and if you remember these words specifically, you have to know how to simplify or enhance it either according to the individual or according to the group. So if you have an individual, if you have a group and one individual is rocking it, then you have to know how to enhance it for that individual. If you have a group and the whole group is rocking it, then you have to know how to enhance it for that entire group. And vice versa. If somebody's not getting it, how do you simplify it? If the whole group is not getting it, how do you simplify it? Like, I refuse to use the word dummy down. Like, that has always gotten under my skin. Like, no, we don't learn on the same patterns. We don't learn in the same way, which is another one of my issues with school. We say because you're all 9 years old, you all learn the same way. No, I wish I would have known when I was 9 years old that I wasn't an auditory learner. I was a visual learner and a kinesthetic learner. I need to see it and I need to do it.
Right.
But that wasn't even talked about then. It was, here, this is what you're learning in science. You're learning about the planets, and I'm going to tell you Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, and if you don't get it, then I'm going to now fail you because you're not getting it. And again, challenge that I pose to the teachers. Understanding, going back to the round one, round two, round three, if we were all the same, this wouldn't be any fun. So why are you treating your students as if they're all the same? Are you recognizing that you have some kinesthetic learners in your classroom that you just sitting there talking to them is not getting through to them? Do you understand that as a teacher? Because if you don't, you're doing them a disservice.
When I first started getting into music and I started playing the guitar, one of my guitar teachers told me that when I started the guitar, it was just like too intense. You're like, hey, no song starts like that, George. It's slow moving. And then slowly as the song goes and goes, it gets more intense and you have this big climax to it all. That's how our conversations are every time I'm with you. We start slow, man. And I'm telling you, around the 45-minute mark, we're both ready.
Like, yeah.
And we did it, man.
But that's what it is, man. That's what it is. And it was eye-opening to me, like, leaving there, George.
Yep.
Man, they being the teachers and educators and administration, they talked about coming back to talk to only the coaches in the district. The athletic director at the school asked me, was it okay if she submitted my name to the New Mexico State Athletic Association because they have a convention that they would love for me to talk at. Like, before I even got there, before I even left there, they were talking about what's next. How do we get you back? And it went as far as when we were on the drive back from Cimarron to Albuquerque, the superintendent told me, he said, hey, when you get these Albuquerque schools and these Santa Fe schools and you know, these bigger districts, they have a lot more money than we do. And my only thing would be that you don't forget about us. Like, that's what he was concerned about. Not highly concerned, but, you know, he jokingly said that. And obviously my response was, there's absolutely no way. There's absolutely no way.
All right. Let me, I'm going to pivot off this something. You said something a little bit ago, and this will be our last point. You're not in a hurry, right?
Like, not super, no. Nope.
Okay. Nope. I meant to bring this up the past couple times we've been together, and I wanted you to expand on this because it was feedback to me. If you remember back when we coached together, there was one piece of feedback you gave to me more than any other piece of feedback.
Yeah,
and it was great, and I really appreciated it, and I wrote it down many times, and I, to this day, still have a hard time with this.
Yeah,
I have a hard time giving instruction to kids or coaching and watching mistakes happen without stopping, correcting, showing, demonstrating, having them slow it down. To this day, I still do it. And you used to, not always, but I'll use the word always, you used to come up to me and would always say, George, let them mess up.
Yeah.
Let them mess up. You don't need to stop it every time.
Yeah.
Why is that? And I'm not necessarily saying that necessarily just in terms of basketball and coaching and skill development, things of that nature, but even in terms of business, right?
Yeah.
Why is that? Why is I really appreciate that. One, because I think you're right. But why is that so important in coaching and leadership and teams?
Because it, like, even that was today's. Did you watch today's one up? Have you watched it yet?
I watched parts. I did not watch it all the way through. That's
so it was literally today's one up this morning on Instagram was I titled it "Stop Stealing the Struggle," and it was exactly that. Like, I use the example of, you know, I was parented. Jason, the stove is hot. Jason, the stove is hot. I told you the stove was hot. And nowadays we parent and we say, Jason, the stove is hot. Jason, the stove is hot. You know what? I'll just take the stove out of the house. Now nobody can eat.
Right.
You know, and it's that. It's so we talking about coaching with questions, talking about allowing them the space to fall on their face and mess up. There is no way that as a parent, as a coach, and as an educator, that you're going to be able to eliminate every problem out of your child, students, or athlete's life. There's no way. There's no way. I don't give it. If you give them every bit of knowledge that you know, they will either still not get something or still do something on their own. So let them fall on their face sometimes. Like, and here's this is the cool part of it, George. There is a scar somewhere on your body that you can look at and immediately know how you got it, when you got it, why you got it, whether or not you should have it or not, and you would not change it for the world because that scar is like, yep, I learned a hell of a lesson by this scar right here. Whether it's on your forehead, whether it's on your arm, whether it was 2 stitches, no stitches, or 52 stitches, like, and that is it. There's no, and the thing about it is you'll never be able to do it. Even if you give them every bit of information that you know, you'll never be able to do it. So yes, of course you want to teach them, school them, have them prevent certain things. But if you still, I'm going to tell you that the stove is hot. And if you still want to touch it, then I told you it was hot. and it is that. And gosh, man, like I got emotional when saying this to the high school group out there. I use, and when I talk about my story and I talk about resilience, specifically resilience, I talk about the year, the 13 months between January 2011 and February 2012. In January 2011, I decided that I wasn't going to play basketball anymore, so I retired. And by February of 2012, I had retired, I was divorced, and I had filed bankruptcy in those 13 months. And I tell people that what allowed me to be able to push through those 13 months and the next 6-7 years after that, leading up to this day, is the fact that I sat the bench my freshman year at Indiana State. I played 42 minutes the entire year. 21 of them were in one game. Mm-hmm. And my high school path was I played freshman as a freshman, JV as a sophomore, made the team as a junior, and finally got some playing time, some significant playing time as a senior. Those instances on the basketball court allowed me to go through divorce, retirement, and bankruptcy because I knew how to handle when life punched me in the face. And if you, as a parent, coach, or teacher, eliminate every little bit of turmoil, heartache in young people's lives, then when it hits, because it's going to hit, and we know that it's going to hit, but when it hits, because they haven't dealt with it, they don't know what to do with it. And that's why now you throw in peer pressure and all of the garbage that they do trying to live up to their peers' expectations, and now they don't know what to do, so now they're slitting their wrists and putting guns to their mouth. Mm-hmm. Like, it's absurd. It's absurd because they don't know how to handle it. And I, you know, like that was super deep, but that was the part that I got emotional because, like, I got a middle school principal telling me that in the last 5 years, he's had over a dozen suicide attempts. Mm. Like, what about being in the eighth grade makes you in a community of 900 people?
Right.
You got 12. Like, what about being in the eighth grade makes you feel like I need to take myself out? Like, that's crazy.
Well, I mean, looking at nine-year-old responses, and I'm sure without question those are not the only responses or the only impact that you had. What an amazing impact you had on those kids, for them to say, hey, people that are bully are insecure and they don't feel good about themselves, so they pick on others to feel better about themselves, or, you know, the cooler person's going to, you know, don't ignore it, be the cooler person. Yeah. You know, to have that impact on those kids, to have that message, to have them still be able to take action, to have a teacher still put it up on a board when you're gone so they can remember it and take action on it and continue to see it, right? Continue to see it is important.
This was she was a long-term sub. This is the last little caveat I'll throw to that. So yeah. This wasn't their teacher. She was a long-term sub. And when she sent me that, her response was, I should really be preparing for my review, which I have in a couple days after you leave. But this was more important.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice. Perfect. Yep. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah.
So let's leave with this. This is totally off subject. Where's the best, when you were at Indiana State, what is the best place you ever played? Like a blue blood, a Duke, a Kansas, a Kentucky, a North Carolina. Where's the best place you ever played?
Did not play any of those schools.
So where would be the best place you ever played? Where it was
environment, like, environment. You know, at those times, Southern Illinois, Carbondale, they had three future NBA guys on their team, Trey Hudson, Chris Carr, and Marcus Timmons. Mm-hmm. So they were rocking and rolling and winning some games. Carbondale Arena is a great place to play. Bradley had Anthony Parker, who obviously played in the NBA, and he and I actually played against each other overseas in Israel as well. So Bradley put together some good teams. Tulsa was still in the Valley at that time. So they put together some good teams. You know, the Valley when I played, we had some guys that can go. But this was before ESPN had 32 different outlets, and so we weren't on TV a whole lot. And you know, if we were to play, it is what the Valley has become now. You know, when you got your Loyolas and your Illinois States and those guys that are Wichita before they left, Creighton before they left, it's the reason that those schools have opportunities to go to bigger conferences is because we were rocking and rolling. But yeah. We had the opportunity. Speaking of Ray Allen, we had the opportunity to play UConn my sophomore year, when they were ranked number one, and our coach said,
we're not, it was a money game, obviously. And he said, we're not ready for that. And I'm like, it's the number one team in the nation. Who is ready for that? besides the number two team in the nation. So, you know, but who knows? Somebody goes out, we go to stores, and somebody goes out and scores 18, 20 points against UConn. Who knows what that does for their career or their confidence. So, I never had that opportunity to play a true. That's probably a lot of the reason why when I did have the opportunity to play someone who went to a blue blood, it probably poured fuel on the fire because
you belong, that you can compete. Yeah. I ask that because I will not make this a long story, but this past weekend, I was lucky enough to go to Lawrence, Kansas for the first time.
Yeah,
and had tickets to watch the University of Kansas play West Virginia. Yeah. I've never been to Lawrence, Kansas. I've never been to the University of Kansas. Never been to Fog Allen Fieldhouse. And as much as I love basketball and it's been a part of my life forever, that was as great a moment that I've had in my life. It was amazing, goosebumps, borderline tears.
Yeah, right?
But this is actually true, And this is what I'm not good. We don't have to go real deep into this at all. But this is what I'm thinking about when I walked away from Allen Fieldhouse. I just sat there and said something like that. That experience for those players, those fans, those recruits, those coaches, those visitors, the other coaches, the cheerleaders, the people that have lived in Kansas since the 1930s and 40s, and this is their team. That experience for all those people, it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
Like there was something, there may have been a tipping. Now, granted, the game was invented there, right? They had Wilt Chamberlain, right? They had all these great things that kind of lined up. But my mind just started thinking about business. It started thinking about the company I work for, right? It gets me to think about, like, Kansas didn't become Kansas. It didn't all of a sudden happen. Like, it had these great big wins. And these great successes, and they compounded it, and they stayed consistent, and they had some values that they stood for. And yes, they got lucky with certain things. The game was like all that, right? But I walked away from it going, you know, like, let me say this. Like, when Duke hired Mike Krzyzewski in 1982, they are not the Duke they are now. They were good. They weren't like they are now, right, at all. Like, and they had made like one Final Four and all that. So he had a plan. Like, hey, I came in and we won 10 games, and then we won 12 games, then we won 17 games, and I almost got fired. Right. But all of a sudden now Duke is the program. It is the Mecca. Right. Yeah. And I'm sitting around going, that's going to be us. That's going to be our company. Like, we may be winning 10, 15, 17 games, and things may be tight or tough, or we may have these challenges, right? Things are good. But everybody, like, we're not Duke.
Yeah.
Right? But I walked away from Kansas, and as inspired as I was about basketball and that experience and, you know, dreaming about my kids and all that sort of stuff, I thought more about our company and about – and I hope that resonates with other people about the company that they work for, of having that type of impact, of having that type of vision, or sitting around – the phrase we used to use in college a little bit was, why not us?
Yeah.
Why not us? Somebody's going to do it. Somebody's going to win the Valley. Somebody's going to win the Valley. Somebody's going to be the first 16 seed to beat a one seed. Yeah. Somebody's going to do it. Yeah. Right. And then it happens. Why not us? Why not now? Why not us? Why not now? We used to say that all the time. And I know that's one, I was interested if you've ever played at any of those places to have that experience at a blue blood type place. Cause it was,
but you have to, and this was not to get any deeper than this statement, but that was part of the reason that I decided to step away from the basketball organization that you and I both worked with, was because my continuous push to them, pun intended, was, what's your why? What's the organizational why? What is the organizational why? Because if you don't know what your organizational why is, then it's going to sway with whatever opinion that comes. But if our organizational why is, we're not here to win ball games, we're here to develop these young people to the best of our ability for the next phase of their playing career, we're here to develop these young people for their lives off the court. If that is your organizational why, then you have to stick to it. And so when Coach K came in those first three years, they won 10, 15, 17 games, and he was on the cusp of getting fired. When you're strong enough in your why, and that's not saying your why is perfect. That's just saying you're strong enough in it. So it's not just Kansas. It's not just Duke. It's the same thing. It's why Roy Williams can go Carolina, Kansas, back to Carolina, and it follows him because it's instilled in him from Coach Smith. It's the reason that Coach Saban, love him or hate him, his coaching tree is as fruitful as any other business. And like, he raises other leaders. It's the reason that Bill Belichick's coaching tree, like, it's the reason that Coach Pop's coaching tree, like, this is what you're supposed to do. This is it.
Right.
This, as a leader, your job is to raise other leaders, not create followers. Mm-hmm. So I was watching the other day, and I totally forgot. It was been more than the other day now. It was a couple weeks ago, and Duke was playing Pitt. And I'm sitting there watching Jeff Capel, forgetting that he's the head coach at Pitt now.
Right.
I'm like, what is he doing? Why? What? Oh, yeah. And Jeff Capel played at Duke, coached at Duke, and now here he is standing opposite sideline coaching against his coach of all coaches.
Yep.
And I can guarantee you, without knowing either one of those two guys very well, Coach K, after they kicked their ass, probably went to him and told him how proud he was and how awesome he is, and whether or not they had dinner afterwards and talked about it. Not, you shouldn't have ever left here, or, you know, isn't the grass greener over here? No, I want you to go out and I want you to do what I raised you to do.
Mm. Right.
And I want you to go make that program great. So now it's just not this program that's great. It's your program that's great, too. And now we have multiple programs that are great. Can you imagine if there was only one blue blood?
Right. Right.
Or can you imagine if there was never a Wichita State or Loyola or George Mason or a VCU a few years ago? Can you imagine if, like, that is why we watch the tournament, is because we want to see where that 14, inevitably it's going to happen. Where that 14 seed, and who's going to wear that Cinderella shoe the longest?
Yep.
So
yeah, but that was without question my big takeaway from. Yeah. And I was putting my mind went to the business spin of, you know, we're going to do great things at our company, and we will be the Kansas
of culture. It is the definition of culture, and your culture is rooted in your purpose. Your culture is rooted in your why. Why are we doing this? Mm. Why are we doing this? When you talk back to your guy that you know, whether or not we're going to do the podcast, John Gordon says, and we've made reference to him plenty of times, John Gordon says, people don't fall out of love with what they do. They forget why they do what they do.
Right. Right. They don't burn out.
Yeah. Keep remembering why. Why am I doing this? Because your why is going to push you through the tough times. Your why is going to push you through those 15 win seasons. Your why is going to push you through those seasons where you're on the cusp of getting fired. Your why is going to push you through when nobody else believes in what you're doing. And you say, yep, we got this. I know, but we got this. Your why is going to push you through. Most people sway with that though, bro.
We've missed you, man. I'm glad you're back. We have missed you. So listen, I know we've gone long, which is, hey, we could go another hour. I just got to bring up one little story, one little question, one little spin, antidote, and Jay and I could talk for a while about it. But we've gone long enough. This is our Why Wednesday. It's good to have Jason back from New Mexico and the facilitation he did out with that school district, and to get into some of this other stuff. And listen, Jay's got his website working. My word for the year is action, and I'm throwing the word ask in there as well. So it's twofold. Really, I'm taking action. Everybody that's listening to this, if you may have made it an hour and a half into this episode and you've made it to the very end, you need to track Jay down. You have a need for him. You have a need that he can fill, talking to your team, talking to your company, talking to your school, talking to any group that you're a part of, right? I would also say that about me and us and the company that I work, like there's plenty of, for Jay and I are in the same kind of deal, same kind of industry, right? And there's plenty of room for everybody. So those are my asks, where I'm going to start being more deliberate with my asks, because I know we can provide value. I heard this, hold with me. I heard this week. It was in my notes. Jay, you were giving me some kudos about my notes, and I'm just filling in time right now as I find this from last week. If you don't, where is it? Is it right here? This is for everybody listening. This is for me as I move forward with my word of the year. When you believe in what you are selling, you have a moral and ethical responsibility to sell it.
Yeah.
Right? I know without question. Everybody listening to this is on a team. You are running a team. You are leading a team. You are on a team. You're all involved with customer service because everybody has some sort of customer that they've got to provide value to and serve. Everybody. And I believe without question, Jason, and what he does for teams and individuals and groups is somebody you should reach out to because I believe in it and I'm morally and ethically responsible to try to help you better your team, program, or group. And I will also say the same about me and the company I work for. I believe in Jay, and I believe in my company, and I believe in myself with what we're able to deliver value to and how we can change IT shops, sales companies, fitness companies have reached out to us. We've heard from a variety of people. So I feel morally and ethically responsible to start asking more. And it's because I believe in it. I believe that it is impactful, and I believe it changes things. All that being said, track Jay down. The show notes has everything, but it's Jason Wells, Jason with a Y, JAYSON, wells.com is how you can reach him. Anything else for anybody, Jay, or for us?
No, man, the blogs. I don't know if you, did you ever read The Power of One?
Yes.
I told you. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, so the blogs will, our episodes of Out from the Cube go up on Wednesdays. It's all a part of our Why Wednesdays, and also a new blog post will go up on Wednesdays as well. So perfect. Wednesdays is going to be the day that a lot of content gets uploaded. And yeah, I actually got an awesome response on the website this morning. I had a meeting with a lady from Washington University, and yeah, she was like, "Your website is unbelievable." So big shout out to Alyssa Curtis. I'm telling you that now. So yeah.
Perfect. You know, and, hey, this power of one, man, one person driving his car to work in Ireland, you know, it's just one person. And it's not just that I need that because I do. We all need it. It's hard to have that inspiration and drive, you know, and be that person because I'm in the middle. Right. But I will say this and then we'll stop recording is my hope is to be the one for somebody else.
Of course.
My hope is that the one person that needs it that I can recognize, or maybe they're not even thinking about it, that I can reach out to that one person and say, man, what you're doing matters. What you're doing is valuable. What you've done for me, what you're doing for, and I'll say this, man, what you did for those kids, I think is awesome. For them to do that. Like, I think that's awesome. Right. Because I know, listen, Jay, listen, and everybody else listen. Jay, I know how this story ends.
Yeah.
I know how your story ends.
Yeah.
Right. And so for you to say, you know what, my first deal, I went out to the small town of 900 and I spoke to 50 kids and I spoke with 9 years, like, hey, Jay, I know how this ends. Right.
Yeah.
I know that when you're standing on a stage with 10, 15,000 people and everybody wants your autograph and wants pictures with you and everybody wants you to sign their book and all that sort of stuff. I know how this shit ends for you. Right. Yeah. So I can sit back and say, man, he went, I remember that. And I knew it was going to happen because I knew he was very deliberate with his purpose. He knew his why, and nothing ever got him off the tracks. Right. Yeah. And so, man, I'm excited about it, man. Now I got goosebumps. All right. Listen, Sterling Hawkins ended my podcast with this last week and he got me juiced up to make sure I end it this way every single time now. And it's very simple. It's the title of the podcast. Get out of your cube, get moving, contribute, collaborate, provide value, and have the life that we're all supposed to have. We're not born to be average. Get out of your cube. With that, we'll see you all next. We look for a great guest this Friday, and we'll be back with Jason next Wednesday. Take care.